After the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. But an angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised as he said." It's Resurrection Sunday. Welcome, good morning to everyone all across the globe. Jesus Path people of all different varieties and stripes from every ethnicity, country, tribe, tongue are all celebrating that he is risen. There we go. I know we don't do a lot of this stuff at Nexus, but there you go. Yes, we should. He is risen. Yeah, all right. I love it. All right. For this Nexus Easter Sunday, though, we're going to get a little bit different, a little bit dark, because I want to ask one simple question of the resurrection. So what? So what? Does resurrection mean anything at all besides some sort of vague hope for the future? Does it mean anything for our day-to-day lives? Is it something we witness, merely witness as an event? Or does it call to us? Does it ask something of us? Does it provide us with a way of life? Does Jesus risen from the grave affect how we live our day-to-day lives? It was a steam room bombshell revelation. I'm at the Scandinav Spa. And I'm sitting in the eucalyptus steam room with a friend of mine, basking in the eucalyptus steam. We're whispering, because you get hushed there, right, if you talk too loud. Whispering, and my friend just drops this bombshell on me. He says, "Brad, wife and I and the kids, we made a decision. 2 years, we're selling our house, we're quitting our jobs, and we are going to spend a year traveling the world with the money we make from our house and some savings that we've got up. In 2 years, we're going to do it. Traveling the world, 20 different countries they were going to visit, a whole year on the road." And I was like, what? Oh, I was so jealous in that moment, but I had so many questions. Well, what are you going to do about the kids in school? What are you going to do when you get home? And they say, "You know what? We're okay. We're just going to start over. It's been a lifelong dream of ours to travel the world for a year. Doesn't matter what happens after. We just want to see the whole world." And as this time came for us, you know, we'd been in there 10, 15 minutes. It's a bit hot. We got to go dip ourselves in the cold, icy plunge pool. And so we get up to leave, and we're heading out to do that. And I'm just overwhelmed that he's actually going to do this. I'm so jealous. And he turns to me, and he says, "You only live once, right? You only live once." It's a rather dogmatic statement that we sort of throw and bandy about these days, right? Hear lots of people as an excuse for everything. "I'm buying the convertible because you only live once, right? I'm ditching my old partner for the new, younger, attractive version." And why? Well, you only live once, right? "I'm going to eat at that Michelin star restaurant. I'm going on that big trip." Whatever it is, you only live once, right? I think that's a good question to respond to on an Easter Sunday. You only live once. Well, it is Easter Sunday, the day we celebrate when at least one person, well, did live more than once. So it's worth pondering, do we only live once? Only live once. The moment he said that to me, it kept rattling around in my head. I don't know about you, but whenever I hear someone say that, "You only live once," right, utter those five words, it just, to me, it feels like so much pressure. Because there's no guarantees. We all get one crack at this. There's no dress rehearsal. There's nobody saying, "Cut, let's do that over again. We didn't quite do that part right." To live and believe we only get one life for me creates two big pressures. First, YOLO places so much weight on the future. You only live once. You got one life, and time is slipping away. You should be doing more, seeing more, tasting more, experiencing more, living more. The words of the great poet Eminem. You better lose yourself in the music, the moment, you own it. You better never let it go. You only get one shot. Do not miss your opportunity. Do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. You better. I bet you all got that song stuck in your head now. Dunk, dunk. Get one life. Don't waste it. I feel so much pressure with that. Ah, what am I doing? I got to make, like my friend, I got plans for like a week vacation. This guy's going away for a year. I should start planning something like that. On the flip side, YOLO also fills me with a bit of regret about my past. If I only live once, well, oh my goodness, what have I done with my time? Have I done well enough? For me, it makes me question my past. It makes me question where I am in life, and when I'm honest with myself, there's some significant ways that life has disappointed me. Let me down, hasn't lived up to my expectations, what I hoped it would be, and so it leaves me under this dual pressure. Oh my goodness, I got to cram so many things in, and oh boy, that whole five-year period of my life, I feel like I wasted. It's just, pressure. It brings me to an odd story in Scripture. It's become a favorite of mine. I see it as a parable for life. See, in the Jewish Scriptures, there's this story in the book of Judges. And it's disturbing because it's grisly and it's shocking. And if you read this story simply looking for a history lesson or a moral lesson, there's not a whole lot there. You won't find much more than a reminder of how awful primitive religion can be. But parabolically for me, the stories become a meditation on the human condition and the way that we all experience life. And the story goes that through a set of just ridiculous, unjust circumstances, a young woman, we're not even told her name, she has to face a premature death. And she's confronted with the horrifying news, you're going to die young. And her reaction is, I think, profound and instructive. She's going to die young. Her one life is going to be cut very, very short. And speaking to the father, the wisdom of this young, unnamed woman, a victim of this cruel and unjust world, it just sort of haunts me. She says to her father, grant me this one request, she said. Give me 2 months to roam the hills and weep with my friends because I will never marry. This young woman accepts her loathsome fate. What other choice does she have, really? But she has one request. For her, her life is going to end before she can reach the one thing that she longed for. The one bucket list item that she had was, I want to be married. And she's not going to get that. She's going to die unmarried, a virgin, unconsummated, unfulfilled, not having lived what in her mind would be a satisfying and fulfilling life. One bucket list item, and she's not going to get to do it. And so she asks her father for time in the desert, and it's interesting. She wants 2 months or 40 days, because that's always how long it takes for the desert to do its work. Right? So she goes. She weeps, laments with her friends, then she returns, and she dies without her bucket list item. And read as a parable, I think this story, this young woman is all of us. And I've come to think that what the story teaches us is this: all of us, no matter age or state in life, must at some point come to terms and peace with the fact that our lives will always fall short of our desires and dreams. This is the lesson of the young virgin for us. The parable here is of the human condition. All of us die without ultimate fulfillment. Like this young woman, we will never sort of reach that full consummation. We've come to realize that this one life we supposedly have here isn't enough. Because life, and here's where you didn't see this coming on Easter Sunday, I'm going to take a little dark turn here. Life is disappointing, frustrating, and restricting. Oh, here's a pick-me-up for us, eh? What do I mean by that? Years ago, okay, life is disappointing. Years ago, Kristen and I, we saved up for this trip, all-inclusive vacation. We get to the airport that morning, and all of a sudden, something's not sitting right. And it's about a half hour before our flight. I'm like, oh, no. And I go to the public restroom and destroy it. In fact, I hit the emergency button. There was an emergency button in the stall. I pressed it. What's your emergency? I made a big mess in here. And compose myself. And I go to Krista. I'm in trouble. I'm very sick. And she's like, what are we going to do? Can you imagine this post-COVID? I was like, well, we get on the plane, I guess. I don't know how many people I infected with my airborne illness. We get in, I survive takeoff, and I'm like, oh no, round two's coming. I go to the plane lavatory, and I'm sick in there. And then eventually the stewardess knocks, sir, are you okay? And I open the door and said, is it okay if I just stay in here for the flight? She's like, yeah. I spent 4 hours in a plane lavatory. And we land. We get to the all-inclusive resort. And I'm like, I think maybe I'm starting to feel better. I go to the buffet the first night. I'm like, ah. So we go, and I fall asleep. And I think I'm feeling better when 7 in the morning, all Kristen and I hear is bang, bang. Bang, our bed shaking. I'm like, what is going on? We had not done our research, and they were constructing another resort right beside us. And from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., bang, bang, bang. Didn't matter where you were. Buffet, beach, everything shaking the whole time, under construction, the whole week. And I was sick for about 3 days, and then Kristen got sick for about 3 days, and finally on the last day, we were kind of feeling better, but by then it was too late, and we got home, and it was back in the day with travel agents still, and I said to the travel agent, our vacation was awful. She's like, oh, you should have used your trip cancellation insurance. What? I didn't even know I had that. We had waited a year to go on this trip, and we were both sick the whole time. Isn't life just like that, eh? It's kind of like Alanis' song, Ironic, right? Got that one thing, and then it's ruined. And we were so disappointed. Our 1 week of vacation spent sick. There are times in life, many times, in fact, when life disappoints us, lets us down, doesn't live up to what we hoped it would be. This is undoubtedly a universal, everyday human experience. How many of you missed a vacation because of COVID? Right? A friend of mine has 2 weeks of vacation every year. They go down to Myrtle Beach every year on March break. March 2020, canceled, COVID lockdown. Planned again for 21, canceled because of COVID lockdown. 2022, the week before they go, his wife comes down with COVID, canceled. 2023, they make it to Myrtle Beach, and he discovers he has COVID and spends the whole vacation locked in a hotel room. Life's like that. It's disappointing, but it's also frustrating. I mean, consider your bucket list for a moment. What's on your bucket list? If you had to make a list of all the things you hope to achieve or do before you die, what would your list include? Now, according to various websites, bucket lists tend to have some commonalities. The top five, apparently, are seeing the Northern Lights, which, by the way, I heard you could see them in Kitchener about a week ago. I didn't know that. Running a marathon, taking an African safari, swimming with dolphins. Most bucket list items are heavy on experience and have identifiable themes, some sort of experience by way of travel, maybe mastery of a language or music. In fact, let's take a look. What do we got? Wow, there's a lot. Okay. These are your bucket list items. Travel. Hot Island, I like it. Leave a legacy. Debt-free living. I don't have a bucket list. Life is good. Isn't it, though? To finish Die Well. Embrace my... Does that say bodacious retirement? That's interesting. I like it. Bench 405 pounds. Wow. Guest star on SNL. Learn to surf. My goodness. To travel to the Gaspé Peninsula. My bucket list is to write a bucket list. Okay. Retire and travel. Antarctic cruise, attend March Madness, multi-week hiking trip, kids' house, car, career, skydive, bungee jump, build a corporate group that enriches the whole group and the world. Cooking classes in an Italian winery, that sounds good. That sounds good. Wake up tomorrow. Oh, to make love in a swanky hotel with a stunning view of the Eiffel Tower. Kristen. I jest, that's mine actually. That's mine. Bungee jumping, skydiving, monthly and yearly goals, high tea at a cute spot in Kitchener. All right. Do the Sound of Music, own a home, ride 200 Ks on my road bike. Okay. Half a marathon. A trip to the British Isles, right? We're starting to pick up. Go to Portugal. Travel a lot. Get back to Kenya. Stay active. Laugh more. That's great. See the Northern Lights. Ha! Right there it is. There it is. Spend time around water. Yep. This one's specific. Take Sarah to Switzerland. I don't know. All right. Someone wants to take Sarah to Switzerland. Snowboard in the West. Oh, get out of here. I'm not reading that one. I know that one's Bronson's. You'll have to ask me about that one later. To leave this world with as few broken relationships as possible. Love and joy and peace and good health. Take the train all the way out west. I like it. Let's leave it there. Bucket list. I love thinking about bucket lists. You know, I was at a wedding, and it was time for the bride and groom's speech. And the groom was doing the typical wedding day stuff, saying all these complimentary things about his wife. But there was this one moment when it really caught my attention, because he was talking about how proud he was of her, because her bucket list was to visit the top 50 UNESCO World Heritage Sites around the globe. And she had just turned 30 and had already visited 35 of them. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's a lot of travel for a young person. I remember I was sitting there, then I was like, wait, what? She only has 15 left to go and she's 30. I remember I was sitting there and I was thinking, well, what if she hits all 50 by the time she's 50? I mean, do you ever think she's going to complete her bucket list by 50? Boom. I finished all 50 of them. I'm ready to go. Take me, Lord. Do you finish your bucket list and go, I feel fulfilled? I was thinking in that moment, listening, I'm thinking the more probable option is you finish your 50 and then you're like, wow, I'm going to make another bucket list. Because maybe you find new experiences as you go through life. I mean, consider your bucket list for a moment. Let's say you did all the things on that list while you're relatively still healthy. Then what? In my mind, we're doomed to one of two scenarios. First, you don't achieve what's on your bucket list, and like the young virgin, you die unfulfilled, possibly nagged with regret because life was too short to do your dreams and desires. Or second, you do achieve what's on your bucket list, and then what? You realize there's more. So you create another one and keep checking them off until you end up in the first scenario. It brings me to a rather uncomfortable observation. In life, there's no such thing as being magically satisfied and fulfilled. There's always more. It's how we're made. We are beings with insatiable appetites. I mean, consider my own bucket list for a moment. One of my bucket list items is that I would love to go to Masai Mara Serengeti, that park that straddles the border between Kenya and Tanzania, and to see the great savanna and all of the wildlife there. And it's a pretty typical bucket list item. It has to do with travel and whatnot, but there's one little key thing about it. I've already been there, and I want to go back, because once isn't enough. There's still this craving, this desire to be in that place one more time, and then, I don't know, maybe another time after that. You can achieve something and still feel not satisfied or fulfilled, or I would love it if maybe one day I could go to like Hell's Kitchen or something and have Master Chef Gordon Ramsay cook me a meal. Can you imagine that? Wouldn't that be nice? But how long after that meal until you're hungry again? 3 hours? Well, maybe a bit longer than that. That's the nature of life. Oh, that was beautiful. Okay, but now I'm hungry again. We're always craving more as humans, and our lives, our desires, our appetites in life are too large to ever be fully realized within the scope of a single lifetime. And realizing that makes YOLO, you only live once, really hard to swallow. Karl Rahner, a German Jesuit priest and theologian, he once summed up life this way, and this is my tattoo, I'm getting it someday. In the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable, we come to understand that here in this life, all symphonies remain unfinished. Oh, I get that. This is also a great way to spice up small talk. Hey, Brad, how you doing? Well, besides living in the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable, beyond that, I'm pretty good. And it's not just the things on our bucket list that will never ultimately satisfy us and leave us unfulfilled. No part of life can. Because in the end, everything attainable in this world still leaves us feeling unsatisfied and unfulfilled. I mean, think of marriage. For those of you who are married, unless you happen to be the luckiest person in the world, what happens in marriages is that you learn something over time. Your spouse is entirely human and can't adequately meet all of your needs and expectations. Our desires, needs, and longings are too large for one person ever to fulfill. Had to have an uncomfortable conversation with Kristen recently. It's been too long. I had to do this. I said, honey, it's time. I need us to have separate blankets in bed. It's just, right? It's just, I have lived an unfulfilled 18 years always without blankets in bed because she does the tuck and roll. Blankets off, half a blanket in bed. I'm like, I can't live this way anymore. Inevitably, our partners disappoint us. They don't end up being all we hope they could be. Friendships can feel the same way. I mean, have you ever had that experience where you meet that new friend or couple and you find yourself thinking, finally, I've met someone that seems like the perfect friend? And then, of course, with time, you realize that, like the rest of us, they have quirks and idiosyncrasies that annoy and frustrate us. I had this experience happen with Glenn Pascoe. When I first met him, it's like, this guy seems like the perfect friend for me. He was even willing to go shopping, clothes shopping with me. But then over time, what I realized is that he's pretty petty. And some of my needs as a friend were not being met because, you see, for 3 years in a row, I've beat him in his March Madness pool bracket, and he hasn't congratulated me once. And I just really think that a friend should celebrate another friend's accomplishments, and you disappoint me, Glenn. Same thing happens with churches or communities, right? People arrive in churches or communities, and it can be easy to begin to be like, oh, I think this place is the place. And then what happens? You go, well, that's kind of disappointing. Hasn't met my needs. Not quite what I hoped it would be. Because our needs and longings are too large to ever be filled. The same can be said of careers and vocations, right? They can't satisfy us because we're too large to be fully satisfied by a profession. Or even think of vacations, even when they do go off without a hitch. You can sit on a beach for 2 weeks straight and be completely relaxed and have the most transcendent experience, and then you have that travel day in the airport, and you get home, and you're like, good night, I need a vacation from traveling. There's always that itch. Life is disappointing, life is frustrating, life is also restricting. Years ago, I'm going to take a real weird turn here. I was on a travel journey with a close friend, and we're laying in bed in our hotel trying to get some shut-eye, and my friend in the dark whispers to me, hey, Brad, have you ever thought about your wife dying? And I thought, oh, yeah, man, I have. Perish the thought. I think we all live in fear of those we love the most passing on. There was this moment of silence between us, and he said, yeah, Brad, I get that. He's like, but have you ever thought of your wife dying in a good way? I was awake then. I said, go on. And he explained to me, my friend got married very young. High school sweetheart, absolutely loves her. And they immediately got into their career vocations. And right before we went on the trip, he just told me she was pregnant. They were having their first baby. And he said to me, Brad, everything I've ever wanted in life is happening right now. I love my wife so much. I'm in the career that I want. I'm about to have a baby, a family. That's exactly what I wanted. He's like, but I'm terrified. I said, what's going on? He said, I feel like life is closing in on me. I've made all these decisions. I'm where I want to be. And yet, so much seems closed off to me. I'm going to be a dad. I can't be going off doing adventures, doing risky things anymore. Sometimes he's like, I know I shouldn't say it, but sometimes I feel like I could do okay on the single market. Talked in bed that night. What my friend was lamenting is that every time you choose one thing in life, you're not choosing several other things. And I believe my friend was capturing this moment, that dilemma we face about how restricting life can be. This is life. And every time I make a decision, it closes off other things. And I've only got one life, Brad, but now I'll never experience this or this or this because I've made decisions like these. Life is disappointing. It's frustrating. And it's restricting. And here's the thing. This is life, at least if we're honest with ourselves. And I know that there are absolutely beautiful and amazing and breathtaking parts of life, but we can't deny the flip side. Sometimes it's not all it's cracked up to be. And in doing so, when we recognize that, being told, well, you only live once, it's just like, ah, the pressure. But the shocking plot twist of Easter is that a man, once dead, is now risen. And with that, Easter gives us the curious possibility that perhaps we don't only live once. Maybe there's more to the story. How exactly does the Jesus path, particularly the path of resurrection, how does it make sense of the fact that life often feels inadequate, insufficient, and unfulfilling? Well, the first thing I would say is this: the Jesus path of resurrection gives us permission to mourn and grieve the disappointments, frustrations, and restrictions of life. Because so often, we're not given permission. Hey, you're doing pretty well in life. Don't complain. But I think deep within us, there has to be a release valve to say, I get that, and yet, sometimes life disappoints me, and it frustrates me, and I feel restricted. And whatever that looks like for us, be it a late-night confession in a hotel bed or something else, I think each of us at some point must mourn and grieve and be honest with ourselves about all the desires and longings that can never be filled. Life is not satisfying. It's not large enough to carry all the energy and desires within us. And why? Ronald Rollheiser says it best, I think. He says, if we don't mourn the perfect, fulfilled life that we can't have, we go through life disappointed, dissatisfied with our lives, restless inside our own skins, prone to anger, and forever expecting unrealistically that someone or something, a marriage partner, a family, children, a church, a sexual partner, a friend, a career, or an achievement, can take all of our loneliness away and give us the complete symphony. And that's impossible. And it creates a pressure. Our yearnings and needs in life are infinite. We're like grand canyons without a bottom. And for that, we're destined to live in the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable. And if YOLO is true, if there's only one life, if this is the only shot we have, then our expectations in life will go up immensely. There's so many things to cram in. And if you don't cross that thing off your bucket list, what a tragedy for you. And moreover, if this life is it, one shot, one life, it's hard for me not to see in many cases life is nothing more than a tragedy. And again, Rollheiser hits this right on the head. He says this: if this life alone has to carry everything, how tragic then to be poor, to lack opportunity, to not be healthy, to not have a perfect body, to lack the talent to adequately express ourselves. How tragic then not to regularly experience ecstasy and love, to not find a perfect soulmate, to have to sleep alone. How permanently tragic then to have been the victim of some accident, to have been abused, to be wounded, less than whole. How tragic then to be in a marriage that cannot fully take away our loneliness. How tragic then to be caught up in duty and circumstance and family and history in a way that limits our freedom. How tragic then not to have a job that is fully satisfying, to not have a career that properly honors our gifts. How tragic then to find ourselves aging, losing our physical beauty and becoming marginalized. How tragic then to have to face death with our lives still incomplete. How tragic then to have to miss out on any of life's pleasures. How tragic then to find ourselves always in lives too small for us. Small town, unknown. Our dreams reduced to ashes, nostalgia, jealousy, frustration. How tragic then to contemplate what might have been, to have made wrong choices. How tragic then to simply be alone on a Friday night. How tragic then to have to spend a holiday without someone special there to share it with. How tragic then to live in a body, a family, a marriage, a home, a world, and a life which can never give us the full symphony nor ever take away our deepest restlessness and longing. There is no other horizon outside of eternity and afterlife against which we can view the human condition in a way that doesn't produce undue restlessness, disappointment, sadness, and cynicism. That, to me, is the meaning of resurrection. And we might think our lives are decent and good, but I think Rollheiser does a fantastic job of going, well, that might be great for you. There's a whole lot of people in this world who their lives, if it's just one, wrapped up in tragedy. And I find it sobering. There's no other horizon outside of afterlife and eternity that makes sense of this. And the insufficiency of life needs to be mourned and understood, because maybe the insufficiency of life points to something. Perhaps we're built for something larger. I always talk to my brother Mike when I don't know if something's ethical, because I feel I can make my case and he'll listen and give me good advice. And I was wanting to do something with the kids a couple summers ago. Called them up. I said, hey, do you think I can go to Marineland? He said, no, you can't go to Marineland. Like, why? It's like, oh, it's so cruel. You can't have orcas in captivity. You're not allowed to go there. I said, why? I didn't put the orca there. He said, no, Brad, trust me. You can't do it. Can't do it. Marineland's off the table. I'm like, ah. He said, what about African lion safari? I said, I think that's okay. So I went to African lion safari. I got the three kids. It's like a 45-minute drive. I pull up there. There's protesters outside. I'm like, great. So I roll down a window, hear their spiel. Hey, they mistreat the elephants there. I said, I hear you. But if I turn this car around right now with three kids after I told them we're going there, I'm going to be in bigger trouble. So I said, listen, if I see anything done to those elephants, you'll be the first to know. And away I went. I didn't feel good. But then I took my kids to the zoo. No protesters. I feel good about myself at the zoo. And I remember coming to the tiger pen and standing watching this majestic creature. I think tigers are gorgeous. And trying to look in its eyes, standing there with the kids, this tiger the whole time just paced the cage. Paced the cage. The whole time it just walked back and forth along the cage fence. And I've read a lot of books about tigers, you know, in their natural habitat. They wander 300 square kilometers. And in these cages at the zoo, they got maybe, what, an acre? They pace the cage. They pace the cage. And do you know why they pace the cage? Because they know. They know they were built for something bigger. They know inside of themselves, just primally, I was made for something way bigger than this. And I can't help but wonder if our own experiences of life, when we feel those disappointments and frustrations and restrictions, is because we also know we were built for something bigger. This is pacing the cage. sooner or later, find yourself pacing the cage. You ever catch yourself feeling that way? Restless, feeling trapped, life's too small, a sense of fulfillment always out of reach. For me, part of what keeps me Christian is that I sense that tiger thing. Built for something bigger than this life alone. And when looking at Jesus' resurrection, you have the courage to trust that maybe, just maybe, YOLO isn't true. Because suppose this life has to carry everything, if this life has to be big enough to encompass all of our hopes and dreams and desires, then this life really is nothing short of tragedy. Life without resurrection is tragedy, but with resurrection, this life doesn't have to carry everything. And when life doesn't have to, it allows us to live vibrantly, enthusiastically here, now, with gratitude and thanksgiving in this place. When I think about where I'd like to travel in the world, there's so many places, but you know what? I've ruled out two places. I've come to peace with it. I don't think I'm going to Russia or China. I just don't see it in the cards, given what's happening geopolitically in the world. But think about it. If YOLO is true, it's like, I want to see the Great Wall of China, but it's not going to happen. For me, I'd be like, well, maybe in the next life. I truly believe that Bruce Coburn hits the nail on the head here. We're all pacing a cage, looking for something bigger, something more. We suffer from the insufficiency of everything attainable, and this cage we occupy in life is far too small for us to find ultimate satisfaction and fulfillment. And the Jesus path asserts, though, Good Friday, the path takes us through death, but Easter Sunday we celebrate because the path continues into resurrection country. And Jesus, in the gospel, before he dies, he's speaking to his followers. And one thing seems abundantly clear to them. Jesus is talking about the end of their time together and having to leave them all. I've got to leave you. And they're troubled by what is coming. And Jesus speaks a word of comfort to them. He says this, "Do not let your heart be troubled. Have faith in God and have faith in me. In my Father's house, there are many places of rest. Would I otherwise have told you that I'm going to make a place ready for you? And if I go and make a place ready for you, I'm coming again and will take you along with me so that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I'm going." Thomas says to him, "Lord, we do not know where you're going. How can we know the way?" And Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Jesus says, "I'm going ahead of you. And I'm making a sanctuary, a resurrection country. And I'm heading there before you, but you know the way to get there." How? Follow my path. Just keep following the Jesus path. To travel the Jesus path is to eventually find ourselves in resurrection country. And it's a terrain that's free from disappointments and frustrations and restrictions. And so to follow the Jesus path is to head towards a destination called resurrection country. It's to move beyond the confines of the cages we occupy in this lifetime. Easter is the beginning of a new story, a new home, a new sanctuary. And it is, as Samuel Wells says, "If you believe that Christ, through the forgiveness of sins, has healed the past, and through the gift of eternal life has turned the future from a threat to a gift, then you can, for the first and only time, live freely in the present." Oh, I love that. There's no longer anything to fear about our past because it's been taken care of, it's been forgiven, it's gone. But staring into the future, we do not need to fear the cage of death and decay. We need not fear the pressure of having to cram anything into this one special, only life. We don't have to fear. You only live once, right? Because when that's true, the future is a threat. Because the clock is always running out. But freed from the tyranny of time and limitation, the future no longer is a threat. It comes to us as a gift. And that means we can live here, now, presently, and receive life as a gift. I'm going to ask Carla to come, and this poem is a beautiful, just some beautiful words around resurrection country, around hope. As we end our Easter Sunday morning together, we recognize life is disappointing, it's frustrating, it's restricting. But we don't need to buy that line, those five words, you only live once, right? Easter Sunday says, no, that's not true, because you were made for something bigger, bigger than this. And the Jesus path takes us to resurrection country. Carla?
I see a new city, poured out from heaven, dressed for a party, blazing with beauty. Her rooftops are radiant, trees trembling with laughter, and joy like a jewel shines in her streets. From her walls and windows, no weeping is heard. Through her gateways and gutters, floods of tears do not flow, for in her homes and houses, no pain dwells. Bricks once broken down in mourning rise again in song and celebration. Stones thrown down by enmity and envy dare to dance in swirling swathes of mercy. She sings a billion voices rising, the long-lost languages of human hopes, the secret praise of human hearts released at last because her God is with her. Because his home is made within her walls, because his voice is heard gentle like the rains of spring, declaring new, new, new. I am making all things new. This is the city I see, the future I belong to. This is the blueprint my heart holds onto. Even now, in streets that sing another story, even here, beneath the darker vision's shadow, this metropolis of mercy promising future realization, active now in love's imagination. This is my dream. And though I wait, and though I long, and though the sacred city may seem slow, still I will hope. Still I will pray. Still, I will today rise up and build. Let's pray. You redeem, restore, renew for love. Your death defeated death, and we have peace. You walk with us in sorrow, with joy. You turn the future from threat to gift, inviting us forward into hope. Amen. So next, let's go from this place knowing that the presence and the power of the risen Christ go with you.